when we left Moses last time, it was both a sad and an exciting time in the life of Moses. It was a time that Moses was no doubt led by God to do the things that he did at the time that he did. And this was to leave his comfortable life in the land of Egypt. Instead, he chose to suffer with his brethren, the Hebrews, in order to save them from their oppression by the Israelites, by the Egyptians, by the hand of Pharaoh. And this all began with Moses around the age of 40. He says, Moses, that he desired to see his brethren and to see the struggles that they were going through and to see what they experienced. And so at about the age of 40, Moses goes out and he sees his people and he looks on their burdens. And this arouses something in Moses that God will use. Moses had great compassion. He had a great desire to do good. And this was beautiful. This is a wonderful thing about Moses. He was willing to forsake all that he had and to live with his people. This is always at the forefront, it seems, of Moses' life, was his desire to do good. Although not always the way God wanted it, maybe. He wanted to do what was right. He wanted to do good and to help. And so Moses, as he was out looking around, he saw an Egyptian, a taskmaster. And he was beating a Hebrew slave. And so Moses struck him down. He killed him. And he hid him in the sand. Now Moses thought this was a secret, but of course he found out differently. It was known, the Hebrews knew, and the Egyptians came to know what had been done. And when Pharaoh found out, he sought to kill Moses. He had to flee for his life. Now I want you to remember the relationship. I want you to think about what was actually present here. You know, Moses wasn't a visitor. He wasn't a Hebrew visitor, you know, that just came to check out the palace. Moses was Pharaoh's adopted grandson. Moses grew up in the home of the king or of the princess of Egypt. Even though Moses was a Hebrew by birth, he was fully Egyptian. Jewish history says that Pharaoh had no other children and that Pharaoh's daughter also had no other children. And she herself had no one other than Moses, the Hebrew man that she had adopted. And you know, this helps to explain why the princess had such compassion on Moses. You know, if she had many children, would she have been so quick to save this Hebrew boy who was supposed to be condemned to death? If Pharaoh had many sons which could have become his descendants, would he have been so quick to allow such a thing? He's the one that sent out the command to have the boys killed. And so whether it's right or not, we don't know. This is just Jewish history, it's tradition more than history, but it's Jewish tradition. Thank you. The family completely accepted Moses, though. This was the point. He was being trained in all the wisdom of the Egyptians. He was probably being groomed to become Pharaoh. He may have been being groomed to become Pharaoh. Now, this man that Pharaoh had taken into his home now becomes a traitor. He's a traitor. He has killed one of his own. Moses was not just going against a culture. He was going against his own family. Those who rescued him from the water, those who cared for him, those who raised him up, who trained him, who taught him all that he was and all that he knew up to the age of 40 years old. These are the people that he was actually going against. Let us not think that this was an easy choice for Moses to make. And it is a choice. You know, at first it can seem that Moses, he just lost control of his emotions. He made a bad decision and now he's suffering all these consequences for what he's done. But this is not the case. According to the scriptures, it was indeed a choice. Hebrews 11:24 says, by faith Moses, when he was grown up, he refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. He chose rather to be mistreated with the people of God. You see, he chose this life. He chose it. He knew that there was something more that he had to do than to just live in the palace of Pharaoh all of his life. Acts 7 and 25 tells us he supposed that his brothers would understand that God was giving them salvation by his hand, but they didn't understand. He thought that they would realize and understand, I'm trying to help you, I'm trying to save you from what you are in. We don't really know if Moses was directed by God in this choice that he made to kill the Egyptian, or if it was his choice. You know, this can present a problem in Moses' life, and we will see many times where he desires to do right and he desires to do good, but sometimes not necessarily exactly as God told him to do it. This very same problem is what excluded him from entering the promised land, if you recall. He was trying to help. He was trying to be an assistance. Here he was trying to help his brothers, so he stood up and he took action. And it seems that God accepted his actions. He was not chastised for rescuing the Hebrew. And so he was thrust, whether he was ready or not, into a life that was very different from what he had known. We read the last time about the two Hebrews who were arguing. And Moses approaches and he tries to resolve their situation. Acts chapter 7 records it as this. Moses comes to them and says, "Why are you arguing? You are brothers." And the man that was wronging the other says, "Who made you a ruler or a judge over us? Do you want to kill me like you killed the Egyptian yesterday?" And at this retort, Moses fled and became an exile in the land of Midian, where he became the father of two sons. Moses left all that he knew. He left all that he had. He went from royalty in Egypt to an exile in the land of Midian. But it wasn't all bad. In fact, it wasn't bad at all. I'm sure it was difficult for Moses, but God had other plans for him. He had other ideas for him. And so we progress really quickly through time here. Verse 29 takes us from the response from the two Hebrews to Moses fleeing Egypt, now to Moses as the father of two sons, suddenly in Midian. Moses was a young man at the time that this happened. And I think that we often get this wrong. This was probably not the Moses that we think of. Moses as a young man. Exodus chapter 2 and verse 15 says, "But Moses fled from Pharaoh and stayed in the land of Midian. And he sat down by a well. Now the priest of Midian had seven daughters, and they came and drew water and filled the troughs to water their flocks. But the shepherds came and drove them away. But Moses stood up and he saved them, and he watered their flock." One thing that I think that most of us get wrong about Moses was that he was an old, rickety, wimpy old man. And of course, he got older, but I'm not sure that rickety or wimpy ever fit into his description at all. Think about it. When he got old, just before his death, what was he doing? He was wandering around the deserts of Sinai, climbing the mountains outside of the Promised Land, leading the people the whole time. He was a strong and very capable man. Let's not make the mistake of forgetting who he really was. First, Moses kills the Egyptian taskmaster. So if we think that the Hebrew slaves were a bunch of poor, barely able to move slaves who were, you know, half dying, that's not the case. That is absolutely not the case. These Hebrew slaves could whip any of us. They had to work all day long, every day in the sun, hard labor producing for Pharaoh. They were strong. They were healthy. Archaeology teaches that these Hebrew slaves were healthy, well-fed people. Now, these taskmasters were in charge of driving these Hebrew slaves. They were able and had the duty of crushing any rebellion that would ever come up. These were not somebody to mess with. Yet what does Moses do? He strikes him down. He hides him in the sand. Now here we find Moses, having ran through the deserts of Egypt, exhausted, he sits down by a well for water, and these seven girls come up with their flocks, and the shepherds keep driving them away, wanting to keep the water for themselves. But what does Moses do? He whips them all. He drives them all off. I don't know how many there were, but there was more than one, and he drives them off and saves them and then waters their flock. Moses may have been more of a warrior than we ever give him credit for. The Egyptians were skilled warriors. During his 40-year training in Egypt, he may have received some kind of training in combat. Because, you know, if you think about it, Moses was always taking care of someone else. Nobody ever beat up on Moses. We don't read that. Nobody ever did anything to Moses. He was the one that rescued everyone else. But you know what's beautiful about Moses is that in this ability, in his ability as a strong and healthy man, was that he was never a bully. He never took advantage of anyone. He never did wrong by it. When he killed the Egyptian, Acts tells us that he rescued the oppressed man. Here he saves these seven women who are not able to defend themselves from these shepherds. He combined his physical ability with his great compassion and his desire to do good. That's a beautiful thing about Moses' life. He is a wonderful example for us. We need to keep this in mind as we consider Moses and who he was. He was strong and capable. He was also gentle and compassionate in a great desire to do good. Exodus chapter 2 and verse 18, after Moses had saved them and watered their flocks, the sisters came home to their father, Reuel, and said, "How is it that you have come home so soon today?" he said. They said, "An Egyptian delivered us out of the hand of the shepherds and even drew water for us and watered the flock." He said to his daughters, "Then where is he? Why have you left him? Call him that he can eat bread with us." And Moses was content to dwell with the man. And he gave Moses his daughter Zipporah, and she gave birth to a son and called his name Gershom. And he called his name Gershom, for he said, "I have been a sojourner in a foreign land." This is a beautiful story. It's such a neat story. Moses saves these seven girls. He goes home. The man takes care of him. One of these sisters becomes his wife. He has two sons, and they live happily ever after. It's a beautiful story, and it's a beautiful ending, and sometimes I wish that it ended that way for Moses, but I don't when we know what happened in his life. We know it didn't end there. This was a time of transition. This was a time of training. He spends a great amount of time here. In fact, he spends 40 years here in Midian, as a shepherd for his father-in-law. You know, he spent 40 years as an Egyptian, growing in strength and knowledge and training, it says, Acts tells us. And so he had a lot of qualities that he needed to lead God's people and to defend God's people. But he also needed a lot of training. He needed to learn how to lead. And so Moses spends the next 40 years as a family man and as a shepherd. And I don't think that it was by coincidence. In that 40 years, he learned what it meant to be a shepherd. He learned what it meant to care for a flock. He meant what it learned to take care of someone and to be selfless for them. He gained training and experience that he needed to guide God's people for another 40 years. And so the life of Moses is divided into 40-year segments. He spent 40 years in Egypt training, and now he spends 40 years as a shepherd training, and then he spends 40 years leading God's people in the desert. Of course, that is going ahead of our story, but we will go back to that eventually. And so a lot happened in his time, his 40 years in Midian. A lot happened. During those many days, which was 40 years, the king of Egypt died. And the people of Israel groaned because of their slavery, and they cried out for help. Their cry for rescue from slavery came up to God, and God heard their groaning, and God remembered his covenant with Abraham, with Isaac, and with Jacob. And God saw the people, and God knew. I love that scripture. God knew. It just, that's how it ends. God knew what? Well, God knew everything. God knew how he was going to rescue them. God knew what they needed. God knew what they were asking for. God knew what? He knew everything. God knew what they needed. The Israelites had now continued their slavery for another 40 years. And so the king, who was Moses' grandfather, he had died. And the next Pharaoh had no problem keeping these slaves for all of his Egypt's projects. But in this time, let's notice that Israel did not forget God. Israel had many downfalls, and we will see those. But in this time, they did not forget God. They cried out to God for help. God heard this, and he felt for them. It was time to save them. God's ear was not turned away from his children. In their need, they turned to him, and he was there to save. You know, God is a God of compassion. He's a God of love. Now, God will leave us in certain troubles for a time in order to grow us and to mature us for his purpose, but he wants to comfort and to save. He wants us to be comfortable. He will choose what is best for us over our comfort. But he desires the best for us. That's why he wanted to give them a land of milk and honey. And so he begins the process of saving them. When the time is right, he saves them. It's a lot like us. I don't know any parents that enjoy giving discipline to their kids. But we do it for our kids, don't we? Because we love them and we want to train them. God wants the best for us. We want the best for our children. We want comfort. But we want character more than we want comfort. We receive this trait from our Father, the trait of compassion. So Moses is grazing his sheep just like any other day. He's there in Midian working for his father-in-law. And he takes him to the west side of the wilderness, to Horeb, to the mountain of God. This place is very interesting, a very special place. I wish we could go into it more, but I'm just going to mention a few things. This mountain of God in Horeb was a place where God spoke to Moses in the burning bush. The Lord met with the people of Israel in Exodus 19. It is here that the law was given. The Ten Commandments were inscribed on stone by God here at this place. The plans for the tabernacle were given in this place. It was a very special place. I think it's very interesting. We don't know much about it, and we don't know where it is. But it was a very interesting place. And so as Moses is grazing his sheep there, he sees this thing. He sees this bush that is on fire, but is not being consumed. It's just burning. And he turns aside to see this thing, it says. And the angel of the Lord appeared to him in the flame, out of the fire of the midst of a bush. And he looked, and behold, the bush was burning, but it was not consumed. Moses said, I will turn aside and see this great sight, why it is not burned. There's much we can take out of this, but I just want to draw a few points out of this. This was symbolic of the people of God, of the church, and still is today. Fire is an emblem in the scripture of divine holiness, of justice. It's also an emblem of suffering and trials, and God purifies his people with it. It signifies that the people of God were under a most severe persecution, a great trial, but they were not consumed. They were not burned up. They were kept by the presence of God from being consumed. It signifies the church today, though through its difficulties and challenges, God keeps it. It is not consumed for his purpose. The bush burned, but it was not consumed. And so Moses tries to approach, and God warns him, do not come near. Take your sandals off your feet, for the place you are standing is holy ground. And he said, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. And Moses hid his face because he was afraid to look at God. So he calls to him out of this burning bush, and he has chosen him to lead his people out of Egypt into this land of rich and plenty. And it is here that God names himself, I am who I am. God names himself here. And I think this is very important. I think it signifies a number of things for us. He says that all generations from now on will know me by this name. This is who God is. I am who I am. What does that mean? First of all, it means that he's self-existent. He has his being of his self. He was not created. Second, it means that he is eternal and unchangeable. He's always the same, yesterday, today, and forever. It means that he is incomprehensible. How do you explain that? You can't. That's the point. You cannot, by searching, find him out. You cannot take an explanation and sum God up in our human language. Lastly, it means that he is faithful and true to all of his promises. He is unchangeable in his word as well as his nature. I am who I am. God says, let all of Israel know that I am has sent you. There's nobody else besides me. All else have their being. By me, there is none apart from me. God says, I'm going to send you to Pharaoh and tell him to let my people go. Now, I want you to try to put yourself in his place here for just a minute. We harp on Moses and we say that he was scared and he was whatever. And it's true, he didn't want to go. But put yourself in his place for a minute. Moses lived in Egypt for 40 years. As the grandson of the king, he knew very well the inner workings of Egypt. You think when God says, go to Pharaoh and tell him to let my people go, Moses must have been laughing to himself. He's not going to let us go. I know how it works. I've been there. I have seen the process. I know how important they are to Egypt. He's not going to let us go. Right? That's what Moses must have been thinking. There may have been, you know, bad memories as well from his last experience in Egypt. He killed a man and then his own grandfather tried to kill him for it. So there was a lot going on that sometimes maybe we don't think about. Why did Moses not want to go? It's pretty clear that he didn't want to go. And it seems out of place for Moses' character, always willing to go and do something. But there was obviously a very serious reason why he didn't want to go. And it could have been partly because God said, Pharaoh's not going to listen to you. He told him right off the bat, he's not going to listen to you. Moses had to have a lot of faith to go and do what he did. And it was a challenge for him. He didn't want to go, but he did. Moses said, they're not going to believe me. They're not going to believe me if I go to him. So God said, what is that in your hand? Well, he said, it's a staff. So he said, throw it on the ground. And he threw it on the ground and it became a serpent. And Moses ran from it. But the Lord said to Moses, well, put out your hand and catch it by the tail. So he did, and it became a staff again in his hand. And again, God told him, put your hand in your cloak. And he pulled it out, and it was leprous. He put it back in again, and he pulled it out, and it was clean. He said, take some water from the Nile and pour it on the ground, and it became blood right there on the ground from the water of the Nile. And so God was giving Moses all of these signs to prove, to show them, I have sent you, so that they will believe you. You see, they didn't know who Moses was. Excuse me. They had no idea who Moses was. They did 40 years ago. They don't know who Moses is. He's going to come in here and tell them, you all have to follow me away from the Egyptians out into the desert. So God was giving him signs to perform that they would believe him. But even with all this, Moses doubted. You see, Moses wasn't without mistakes. He had his problems. He was a man. Sometimes we, as many throughout the scriptures, we kind of hold Moses up as like a spiritual superhero. But he was a man. He was a man like you and I, a servant with faults, just as we have. Exodus 4 and 10 says, but Moses said to the Lord, O my Lord, I'm not eloquent, neither in the past nor since you have spoken to your servant. I'm slow of speech and of tongue. Was this true? Was this fact? Acts 7 and 22 says, and Moses was instructed in all the wisdom of the Egyptians, and he was mighty in words and deeds. Maybe it was an excuse. I don't know. Maybe Moses did have a problem. But I know what Acts says. And I know that Moses didn't want to go and he kept making one excuse after another. He didn't want to go. You see, there are times when Moses wanted to help. He wanted to take action, but maybe he didn't want to do it just like God said to do it. The way that God said to do it. But Moses and Aaron go. They go to the people. The people believe. And the people believed. And when they heard that the Lord had visited the people of Israel and that he had seen their affliction, they bowed their heads and worshiped. This must have been a beautiful time to God to absorb this worship, to take in this worship, that finally the people are ready to go and they are trusting in me, they are worshiping me. The problem is that they didn't know that things were going to get much worse. Very much worse before things got better. You know, sometimes God will just rescue us out of a trial, but many times when we pray to God and we ask Him to rescue us out of a trial, we have to endure more trial before it's over. And we can lose our faith. We can lose our trust in God. They lost their faith. They lost their trust in God, and we'll see that. They wanted God to rescue them from trouble, but they didn't want to do anything. And so, as God commanded, Moses and Aaron went to the king of Egypt, and he said to him, "Thus says the Lord, the God of Israel, let my people go that they can hold a feast to me in the wilderness." Well, that's reasonable, isn't it? He didn't tell them, "Let my people go. We're going to go to a land of our own. We'll never be back." He said, "Let us go 3 weeks' journey out into the days, journey out into the wilderness to worship God." That was a reasonable request. They started small, right? They started with something that could happen, that was a reasonable request. But this did not happen. Pharaoh refused. He said, "Who's the Lord that I should obey His voice and let Israel go? I don't know the Lord. And moreover, I'm not going to let Israel go." Then Pharaoh told the people that they were lazy and idle for requesting to go worship. For this, Pharaoh increased the load of the people and he made them do twice the work which they were unable to do. The elders came and they said, "Why do you treat your servants like this? No straw is given to your servants, yet you say, 'Make bricks,' and behold, your servants are beaten. But the fault is in your own people." But he said, "You are idle. You're idle. That's why you say, 'Let us go and sacrifice to the Lord.' Go and work. No straw will be given to you, but you still have to deliver the same amount of bricks." And so this is not a very pleasant time for the Israelites. This is not what they expected. This is not what they were hoping for. This is not the salvation that they were expecting, is it? They went to Moses and they said, "The Lord look on you and judge you because you've made a stink in the sight of Pharaoh and his servants and have put a sword in their hand to kill us." Then Moses turned to the Lord and said, "O Lord, why have you done evil to this people? Why did you ever send me? For since I came to Pharaoh to speak in your name, he has done evil to this people. And you have not delivered your people at all." I feel like Moses kind of knew that this was going to happen, don't you? Moses kind of knew that this was coming. And that's why he was afraid to go. Pharaoh refused to let the people go, and the people now despised Moses. And they have no faith that God can save them. They think all is lost. There was nothing insignificant about their troubles, but they didn't even have a chance to be tested. They already had lost their faith. But look at what Moses does in contrast to the people. All the people are calling out to God before, and now suddenly what? They're cursing Moses. Where was their faith? Now Moses, on the other hand, goes directly to God. He was troubled. He was confused. He didn't understand what was going on. And he pleads with God, "Why has this happened?" And Moses is rewarded for his decision to go to God. God says, "But the Lord said to Moses, 'Now you shall see what I will do to Pharaoh.'" For with a strong hand he will send them out, and with a strong hand he will drive them out of his land. You see, God wasn't done. God wasn't done with Pharaoh. The Israelites thought that the plan had failed and they now had to suffer forever under greater burdens, but this was not so. God had a plan for them. God had a plan for their cries, and he was going to give them what he had promised, their promised land. Now this response from God, I want to look at this and then we'll close. This teaches us a number of things. This response from God teaches us that when we think the plan is falling apart, it's really just falling into place. When we think that all is lost and God doesn't know what he's doing, the plan is just falling in place exactly like he wants it to. If the plan doesn't play out like we think it should, it doesn't mean that God is failing. This applies to us today in our life very much. Secondly, God has a purpose for his people. We often don't understand it at all. We don't know what God is doing. But there is an underlying purpose for what we go through, that God has a purpose for his people. Thirdly, God takes an opportunity, every opportunity, to glorify himself. Now you shall see what I will do to Pharaoh. You see, Moses thought that Pharaoh was in charge. He said no. Now what are we going to do? He said no. Pharaoh wasn't in charge. God was taking the opportunity to use Pharaoh's stubbornness to show them how awesome he was. That's what it was all about. God wanted Pharaoh to say no. He wanted to show his power to Moses, to the Israelites, and to the Egyptians. He wanted to show them that he is more powerful than kings or than nations. Isaiah 40 and 15 says, "Surely the nations are like a drop in a bucket. They're regarded as dust on the scales. He weighs the islands like they were fine dust." You think he can have his way with nations and do as he desires? You see, they had to learn to trust in God, to trust in what he could do. I want to close this morning with the lyrics of the chorus that a woman named Lauren Daigle sings. She says, "When you don't move the mountains, I'm needing you to move. When you don't part the waters, I wish I could walk through. When you don't give the answers as I cry out to you, I will trust, I will trust, I will trust in you." That's where they needed to be. That's where we need to be. When the plan seems like a mess and like God doesn't know what he's doing, don't worry. God says, "Now watch what I'm going to do. Watch how I'm going to work this out." There's so many beautiful examples of this to come. I don't want to stop, but there's some really beautiful examples of this to come. That God leads them to a place of no return, a place of certain death, a place where there is no hope. And then he says, "Look what I'm going to do." He tries to get the people to trust in him. And that was always their greatest downfall, that they failed to trust in God. Let's not be that people. Let's trust in God and what he can do. The floor is open if any would like to come and make a request known at this time. Please stand as we have an invitation song this morning.